É. Hola. Ya he puesto a grabar, porque tanto así tendrán 10 minutos de gente que entra y lo acabo de encender. Todo perfecto. Muy bien. Luego esto se graba en la nube y ya veré cómo bajarlo. Vale. A las 12. Hola. Vale. Yo a las 12 vienes aquí y te lo paso. Te lo llevo. Vale. Cierro la clase y ya está. Ok. Chao. Los que estáis online, ¿veis bien? Esperaremos como siempre hasta las 15 o una cosa así. En principio está registrado unos 50, unos 7, 5 o 6 están ahí y unos 10 seguro que no vienen. Y me parece que alguno hasta se había registrado un par de veces con dos emails diferentes, con lo cual creo que todavía vendrá alguien. Cuando estemos todos, la primera cosa que vamos a decidir es en qué idioma lo hacemos. Hay dos opciones, que son inglés o castellano. El valenciano lo entiendo, pero no suficientemente como para hablarlo. Si queréis en italiano, sospecho que no. Y pues entonces, si hay alguien que solo entiende inglés, lo haremos en inglés y si no, lo hacemos en castellano. Entiendo que todos entendéis inglés, con lo cual daré por asumido que si toca, toca. Luego, en el curso, en el plan del curso en Índico está puesto que el lunes empezamos, me parece, a las 9:45. Me gustaría adelantarlo a las 9:30 porque tenemos un evento a las 11:30 en el salón de actos, al que tengo que dar otra charla, y entonces me gustaría intentar llegar sin correr. Entonces, si empezamos a las 9:30, acabamos a las 11:30, llego que solo han hablado el director y ya no es un problema. Lo recordaré a finales de la clase. para pasar el tiempo. ¿Hay alguien de doctorado? Uno, dos, tres. Y todos los demás sois de máster, ¿no? Bueno, tú no. ¿Y hay alguien que no habla castellano de momento? Si prefieres, lo hacemos en inglés, ¿eh? ¿De dónde eres? ¿De dónde eres? California. Ok. Suele haber un par de personas que... Bueno, estas cosas aquí de en plan chorra las digo en castellano, ¿vale? Luego paso, cuando empezamos el curso, paso al inglés. Sí, tampoco es mi idioma nativo, con lo cual. Bien. ¿Qué más? Entonces, sois casi todos de máster, como es normal. ¿Todos del máster de aquí? ¿Sí? ¿No? ¿Tú de dónde eres? ¿De qué? ¿Y estás en un intercambio? ¿Cuánto tiempo estás aquí? Vale. Han quitado el reloj ahí. Bueno, en realidad está aquí. Tiene pinta de estar roto. ¿Qué hacemos para pasar 5 minutos? En fin. Empezar ya me parece como poco español. Bueno, sí, las disculpas las digo cuando empiezo porque es una parte del curso. Bueno, hacemos que empezamos y ya está, venga. Voy a cerrar esa puerta. Ok. A ver. This course started something like 5 or 6 years ago. I actually think that the first year in which I gave it was during the pandemics. And it was supposed to be live, but then, of course, we had to be logged in. And so the first time was basically online. A couple of years after, we moved to being live, but there has been some request in order to try to broadcast it. And I think that some people will take advantage of it by the Zoom connection. But in principle, I consider it as a live thing. So I will move, I will, well, I'm not doing many things, but in any case, I'm here. So I'm discussing with you. I apologize with the people online because I'm not talking to them. I'm talking to you. I will record the class, and if the file can be compressed enough, I will try to upload to the web page of the Indigo of the program. So if you have to, I mean, also in a couple of years, maybe you can take some tips. I told before that I want to, first of all, apologize for the course. The course is intended as a way in order to homogenize a bit the master thesis production for the institute. Why? Well, I've also been in the jury for many years, but what we noticed usually is that the differences between the master thesis were huge. So you could have some theses that were well written and understandable, another that was poorly written and incomprehensible. Okay? This difference is not really related to the students. Most of the time, the difference in the, I'm not saying quality because the quality refers to the science behind, But the difference in the presentation of the material that you have most of the time depends on the advisor. There are advisors that are strongly on the student and correcting and changing things, suggesting. Those theses usually have a very high quality in the presentation because they have been evaluated by someone with experience on this particular process that is putting science into a text. There are other theses in which the advisor has no time or is directing many theses at the same time and it doesn't devote enough time to the correction of the thesis itself. Those theses in which basically the student is left alone usually are poor quality on the side of the presentation. I'm not talking about the science. I'm talking on the fact that your research is not shown in the best possible way. Typically, the figures are awful, no captions. The question, maybe you have too many questions, most of them useless. The bibliography is sloppy, everything. Okay, all of these things really is not up to you, is up to the advisor to say, this bibliography is missing. This, you have already said price before. This should go to an appendix. Okay, since we have managed to see that there was a broad problem in this, we decided to start this course in saying, okay, at least the student will have a couple of hours of suggestions of how to do these things. Why? Well, because this is the master thesis. I'm talking to the people that are doing the master, but of course, for the PhD, most of the time is the same. So the master thesis is really the first place in which you have tried to write some science in a given way. Okay, up to the moment, everything will change, but up to the moment, there is a standard way to present results. Okay, why I want also to apologize? Well, this started 5, 6 years ago, so the course, the slides, has been produced mostly 5 to 6 years ago, but of course, every year I'm updating. Now, what has changed? Since last year to now, I myself started to use heavily the AI. And of course, it's stupid to consider that at this moment you will not use it. I mean, it's of course mandatory to learn how to use the AI to produce the text, to help to the text, to improve the figures, and so on and so forth. And I'm sure that you are using it much more than me. So let's say that I started using it 1 year ago, so that I have 1 year of experience. Last year, I remember that most of the students were already using that, but the AI of 1 year ago is not the same as now. Okay, so it's clear that my course will have to be modified now, next year. So in this moment, I'm starting to modify the slides and things. And for the first one, the one of today, I really have been thinking a lot and I think that is still valid. So most of the things that I was saying 5 years ago in the first class are mostly okay. The one that I think I will have to change most is the technical one, the one of tomorrow, not tomorrow, of Monday. And then I will see. So if you will see some work in progress, well, it's of course is what everybody is feeling in this moment, that everything is work in progress and everything is changing very fast. Okay, every time in which I see that something that I've written has to be modified because of the AI, well, I modified the slides in order to put a point there. Okay, here I suspect and I expect that you will try to use this. I had previously the third class was devoted to correction of some exercise. What was the exercise? The exercise was producing the building blocks of the thesis as an example. The building blocks were figures, equations, short bibliography, an index, so the things that are technically given in some particular way that you cannot avoid. You cannot write an index as you want or whatever. Well, the index is written automatically by the editor, but in principle, there are rules of how to put a figure, things like that. Okay, so what I was giving after the second class was saying, okay, by the next class, you will produce examples of these objects and we will discuss them and correct. Now, I want to go a bit farther. Precisely of the AI, because of the AI. What I want to say is that what I will going to ask you now, the course starts today, Thursday, and then next week we have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So it's in 1 week, let's say. At this moment, I think that in 1 week we can do a lot. So now I start to explain what I want to talk today, of course, but at the end, I will suggest what I want you to prepare by Wednesday. Wednesday, we will have a class that was, in principle, all devoted to the usage of AI. Okay, so what I will ask at the end of today basically is to write your thesis by Wednesday. Okay, help heavily by the AI. Then, what we will do is to go through the thesis that you have written, trying to understand where the usage of AI without supervision or with supervision gives you scrap or not. During this year in which I've been using it, I've discovered a lot of things that if you do not supervise it, gives a bad result. Okay? So, I think that what we have to learn is how to use that object in order to give something that is meaningful. Okay, take control of the AI, not be controlled by it. Fine. So we will have some exercise that are technical, in which also you probably will use the AI in order to improve the picture or things like that, but in which I want really an object that is something that can be included in the text, like a figure. And some in which I want you to produce text. Okay, and then we will discuss the text. Fine. Okay, so this was a bit of the starting point. Well, if there are questions from the online people, probably you turn on the microphone and you say that you have a question, because I think since I'm sharing, I will not see any. I don't want to put the chat here. So, well, try to make you heard. Okay, so what I want to explain these days is how to write the thesis that is something like 50 pages. In the case of the master thesis for the University of Valencia is 50 pages, probably everywhere in Spain. So it's a concrete object in which you have something that is already specified. The content, of course, is up to you. And the problem, as I wrote here, is that we learn how to write basically by trial and error. You discover that there are some physicists that write very well-written papers and others that write poorly. This we cannot improve. Everybody. Someone could be a Cervantes and someone else no. But then you can try to improve and not being like Cervantes, but still you can write something that is readable. So the object is that people that are not Cervantes or Shakespeare could write something that if I read it, I can understand. Okay? This you do by trial and errors. And the second point is that usually you learn because you are working with someone that is more senior than you and that correct and things and show you how to write and things like that. Here, I'm giving you an example that is striking. This is a paper of 1973, I think, by a Nobel Prize that actually happened to be one teacher of mine when I was in Rome University. Well, now it's 90 or it, well, probably if I say it's 90, it will not agree, but say 85. Okay, but when he was writing this, it was 20. So I mean, not the master thesis, but a couple of years after. So it was a very young research. Now, this paper is of 1973 and is one of the building blocks of what is called perturbative QCD. So QCD was in the infancy. Probably the word QCD was not even used, quantum chromodynamics, but it was a theory in which you have objects inside the proton that were doing things. And you just have the idea that there were things inside the proton that you now call quarks. And there was no way to compute the experimental result of the interaction of this object inside the proton. Okay, so this guy developed a method in order to take into account that when you crash two protons one onto the other, the objects that really interact are not the protons, but the quarks inside, and how to take care of what happens to the object inside. Now, this paper has 81 citations, actually 86. I don't know why this year there were five citations more. So everything was stagnant for 50 years, and then I don't know what. Yeah, of course. I've read them. I mean, they are making publications since the guy is 80 or 90 or whatever there was the birthday. And so they've written some memories of, and so all these papers are. I remember when I was a young student with. Okay, so now it's 86 citations. To understand, 86 citations for a fundamental paper of 60 years ago, of 50 years ago, is very few citations. Very, very few. Now, this paper was written 3 to 4 years after, 1977. You see that there is also Parisi, and there is also this other guy, Guido Altarelli. He died 5 years ago or something like that. I think he was a bit senior than Parisi. Let's say this guy was 30 at that moment, and this was 25. So maybe one was a postdoc, but the relation between the two were more or less this one. Okay, this paper basically cover the same subject of the first paper. However, to the date, well, this is no longer 8,500, this is 8,800. In the last year, there are 300 citations more. And cover the subject that is commonly known as Altarelli-Parisi equation. So these are the equations that we use when we want to study how the quarks interact inside the proton when the two protons or two neutrons or whatever crash onto each other. So LHC basically is using this heavily. Of course, there is a group of Russians that has done the same at the same time. So this is also known as Dobschitzer-Glibov-Lipatov-Altarelli-Parisi equation, or the GLAP. But in our community, usually we call it Altarelli-Parisi. Now, the fine thing is that the Altarelli-Parisi equation actually are already in this other paper. And there are very, very old paper of the end of the 70 that called this equation Parisi equation, because actually it was invented here. So what happens between one thing and the other? This paper is awful, and this paper is magic. Okay, and this is just because not of the physics, but of the way in which it's written. So, in the first paper, there is this equation. It's just 4 pages. There is this equation that is the fundamental equation. This is what someone in the 70 was calling the Parisi equation. However, you see there are things, for example, this FPN square is not even defined in the paper. Because you have to go to other papers in which someone else has defined the paper. But in the paper itself, there is no sentence in which say where FPN square is. Okay? There are things that are devoted to. I think I put this. Okay. This is very nice. The proof of three is this equation, is rather simple. We only sketch its derivation and then there is nothing. Okay, in a 4 pages paper, you have no time, no place to put a lengthy demonstration of the things, but maybe you could have written an extra 1 page for an appendix in which that is explained. Or maybe you could have written a paper that is 8 pages long if it's so important. I mean, you are a young guy that have found a brilliant new thing. Well, take time to write it. Okay, this is an important part of our work to, now it's called dissemination, to produce something that is understandable by other people. Okay, what happens in the other paper? This is the equation in the other paper. It's basically the same, it's just integrated. This is a differential equation and this is an integral differential equation, but you can write it out and it's the same. Now, most of the paper, oh no, I've, well, this is the PDF before the adjustment that I've made this couple of days. I've put in the, well, in any case, there are places in the paper where you write precisely what it is. PZ is the variation per unit time of the probability density of finding inside a quark another quark with fraction Z. The paper is full of things like this. I explain the function, I explain the physical meaning of the function, and so on and so forth. So what happens is that if you write a thing in a good written, in a well-written way, then you have 8,800 citations. If not, you have 80. Now, I want to stress, it is the same physical content. Okay? What was grid of Altarelli? It was precisely that it was a grid communicator. So most of the papers of Altarelli are understandable. He has written many papers. Most of them are well written and you understand them. So in this particular case, since they were in the same office and they were started the talking, Altarelli understood the way to present the same result of Parisi in a clearer way, and they said, well, I don't know the story precisely, but more or less I can guess that say, why don't we rewrite this in this other way? Since it's your work, would you do this with me and we sign both? And they've done this. Okay, with Parisi was something very common because Parisi is one of these people that you feel it, that you feel that what you would call a genius. And you feel that you do not understand him. So most of the time when I went into his office and we have a problem and then we say, and then he was saying a sentence that you say, ah, and that's it. And he was going to another stuff because he has many things to do. And then when you were going back a couple of weeks after, you say, ah, now I understand what he was saying. So it was the kind of people that has brilliant ideas, but the way to communicate them was poor. Actually, he was teaching me statistical field theory. He has written a book on statistical field theory, and the book is not written by himself alone, and is understandable. The class was a mess. The typical class in which you have the blackboard, and he was writing one thing here, then one thing there. Then was going back, and I mean, so communication is a crucial part of our work. Okay, this is the message. Otherwise, you can invent something like general relativity, but if you cannot explain it, there will arrive some other guy that will write the new version of general relativity that will be understandable and take merit of it. Or maybe your idea that is brilliant, nobody understands it, and it takes 30 years to become relevant because nobody has understood it. Okay, there are suggestions of how to write. So I will now give you a couple of tips from writers. writers that do as a work writing. So this is our, let's say, secondary work. We have to do research and we have to write it in order that people understand what we are doing. Other people just write. So this is Cormac McCarthy, that was Nobel Prize on Literature 10 years ago, something like that. And he was a very a friend of, I don't remember who, but he has a paper in Nature. Okay, why he has a paper in Nature? Because he was a friend of a biologist, a friend of him, that told him to write together a paper, a short letter in Nature, in which they were explaining how to write. She was explaining to him how is written a paper, a scientific paper, and he was giving tips. Okay, so the first point, the paper cannot cover too many things. Well, I will switch between papers and thesis back and forth because they are strongly related. Of course, this is not the same object, that there are things that are specific for the thesis, but how to treat the subject is valid for both. So a paper cannot cover many ideas. If you have many ideas, you do many papers. Okay? Then, if something isn't needed, omit it. Okay, you write things when you go back and when you go back and read it, you start to delete. It's much easier to delete than to write. So the first time you try to write everything that you want, and then when you read it, you remove and remove and remove. Okay? This is like a sculpture. You have the block of marble, and then you cut and omit sentences that are redundant. You have to say the same thing twice, and so on and so forth. The language. When you use, well, there is a language that we use usually to say serious things. If you want to talk with your friend, you use a kind of language, but if you want to talk with your peers, you use another one. The problem is that when you use a, let's say, serious way of talking in a written text, it becomes boring. Okay? So he suggests from time to time within the standard formal language in which you talk about an equation to introduce some break using more conversative language. So either, for example, I start a paragraph saying, let's now go to, okay, this small starting point, let's go now, that means that me and the reader are together in this, is a break. I could have started, we now review the, okay, so more small things here and there make the language more palatable for the reader. Okay, so only a couple of ideas, two or three ideas per paper. Remove everything that is redundant and try to maintain the tone soft. Now, first glint of AI usage. I have a student that was doing a practice, an external practice with me, and I was writing the text, not you. And in this case, the form was 10 pages. And I told him that there should be one page of bibliography, so nine, one page of introduction, so eight. And then I said, okay, start writing this. I was reading what he wrote. And there was a couple of paragraphs that were well written, but extremely boring. And I was saying, this is AI. And he said, yes, this can be seen to be AI because it's so precise, so I don't know. Unfortunately, I didn't insert the example, but you immediately recognize something that is well written, But it's boring, boring, boring is the only sentence. This is one thing that I want to see on the exercise when we will talk about AI, okay? I want that you produce text and then we will go review saying, okay, this test should be improved because of, and we will see that probably the language used, you see that is sloppy. He was also saying that you should enjoy. Now, this is extremely difficult. When you write, I mean, when you do physics, writing could appear as a boring activity with respect to the rest. If you are really enthusiastic on what you are doing, I mean, you are not doing physics if you are not enthusiastic on doing physics. This would be the goal. If you do physics in research, as a work, well, I mean, I could have done some other work in which probably I would be paid more. I want to do this because I like to do this because I can stand in front of a blackboard for hours, and most of the time you have to stop me instead of saying, okay, it's now to go, and I'm okay. This is the typical situation. So in the standard situation, you are excited when you are doing something new and you have discovered something. And okay, now you have discovered something and you have it. And now you have to sit and write down what you have discovered. You would prefer to say to the people, come to my blackboard, I've discovered this. Look at this equation. This is the first time everybody solved this. Writing this down is boring. Okay, here is where I think that AI would be helpful. The blank page is awful, and writers know this. So now I'm saying I write incredibly long prompt in which I say, I want you to write a short paragraph in LaTeX talking about this and that and that and explaining the question that, and I feed the question and blah, blah, blah. And so at the end, I get it to produce, say, 10 lines. Okay, I put in my overleaf. And then I start to work on it. Okay? This will be extremely helpful. Before, you had to start from a blank page. If you enjoy writing, that's an asset that is wonderful. Okay? Unfortunately, not everybody enjoys writing. So the typical thing is that, well, you write the paper. I do the work and then you write the paper. There are people that usually do only the writing. And have not done nothing in the research. But other people find a good agreement and say, I do the physics, you do the writing, and everybody's happy. Okay, if you manage to write yourself, then you have more control on your ideas. Okay, now, which is my public? Now, this is another important point. We are talking here of the writing of the master thesis. Okay, so you have a very specific public. It's not written for Aunt Polly, for the newspaper seller in the road, for the television. No, it's written for people, okay, that are in front of you and that form your jury. This is your goal, writing something for these 3 to 4 people. Okay, so this is a very specific group. The same happens for a PhD thesis. In this case, the jury will be composed by 3 to 5 people, and actually, you have chosen them. So it's even more specific. In the case of the master thesis, you have not chosen them. They are a bunch of physicists, and probably they have to read many theses at the same time. Usually, we have 3 to 4 theses in each jury. And the thesis could cover different subjects. So you do not have to expect that the people that is reading it is precisely working on your subject. Okay? But you are guaranteed that they are from the department, so they are physicists with a general background on what we are doing. Okay? Then, how is organized the course? First of all, we have 2 classes in which I really go in detail on how to write the thesis. The one of today is the general organization of the thesis, and the one on Monday on the specific technical point. the abstract, the pictures, the bibliography, and things like that. Then I want to look to your production on the technical object. This would be on Tuesday. Then we will look to the AI production. This will be on Wednesday. And then we will have the last talk in which I will show you how to defend the thesis. Now, so the main block is how to write the thesis, but then there is one day in which you have to defend it. This is a completely different way of structuring the material. Both are two of your side activities when you work in this. You are a researcher, you do physics, but then you have to be a writer and then you have to be an actor. Okay? Being an actor is another part of the game. So, also in that case, someone is better and someone is worse, but still you will have to do some kind of presentation. And since there are tricks to do a better presentation, then we will discuss it. Okay, how we start? Well, I'm sorry. This is the old version. I prepared the new one, but this is the old one. Okay, so the first point is really basic stuff. Then we go to the organization of the thesis, and this is today. The first two points are today, and the other two are on Monday. So graphics, equation, things like that, and the bibliography that is crucial. Okay? So this first part are two classes that are 1-2, in which at the end of it we know how to write the thesis. So let's start. I'm not teaching you the language. So I suppose that if you write in English, you know English. If you write in Spanish, in Castilian, you know Castilian. If you write in Valencian, you know Valencian. Okay. Here, last year I wrote, everybody in our field write in something that resembles English. I mean, I suppose that you are the only one here. An English-speaking native can read the paper from everybody and more or less understand, or sometimes you say what is written here. Yeah, so you feel that this is not the way we say it, but still is okay. So this is the typical situation: idiosyncrasy of every language pour into the English. So you can read a French one, and you see, okay, this construction looks French or Latin in a sense. When we speak, even more. Actually, you can play with the accent when you talk in English, and you can make a strong accent if you want or not. But in any case, your accent goes into the English, of course. However, now this is no longer true. So in this moment, all of us, we write our paper and then we feed it into the AI to glean the English. So since last year, all the papers are completely indistinguishable from a paper written by a native. This is not true. Probably the native will pour into some idiosyncratic sentences that the AI doesn't fit. Okay, so now what looks strange is the paper written by an English-speaking native language user and not the rest. The rest is good. Okay? So at the end of the day, you take your thesis, you put into the AI, and you clean it. I suggest to do this also for Valencian and for Spanish, because some sentences will be written a bit better. But then you have to choose with what you really wrote and the result of the AI, because of course, maybe you really want to use this particular form. Imagine that you are writing in Spanish, that is your native language that you use every way, and so you know the feeling that you want to give. And then the AI gives you a Spanish that is more standard or whatever. So in that case, you can say, okay, I really want to give this nuance and not the basics one. For English, since most of us are not native speaker, we probably are not able to insert things that are very specific to a native speaker. The other things that I'm not teaching is the physics. It is supposed that you are the expert on what you are writing. You are writing a master thesis that is on the subject that the advisor gave you a few months before, but now you are the expert on that. So that is supposed to be correct. So let's assume that your thesis from the physics point of view is correct. Okay? This we cannot improve. Okay, the language. As I told you, you have three choices for the University of Valencia. I strongly suggest English. Why? Well, up to this point, at this moment, you have already seen that all the papers that you have read are in English. The bibliography that the advisor gave you are in English. Everything is written in English. So this is the first time that you can write in English, probably. If you have a thesis that is written in English and then maybe you want to abandon the academy and you want to go to work in a company, whatever, you can present something that can be understood by everybody. Imagine that you go to work in the States for a consultancy or whatever, you can present something that is in English. You can go to Germany and you present something that is in English. Everybody could see that you have produced an object that can be understood. Spanish or Valencian is up to you. You can do it. But this is my feeling. I think that it's a good moment in which try to do it. I mean, I can do it, no? Let's show that you can do it. However, of course, you can do in whatever language. So you choose. The editing language. As I told here, there are no choices. The only language that we use is LaTeX, full stop. It's not true. There are people that write scientific papers in Word or strange stuff that is there or whatever. But really, the language that we use to write science is LaTeX. So I strongly suggest you to install a version of LaTeX on your particular operating system, and that's it. Here, I think this is still true. For Mac, I use TechShop. I don't know if there are other releases, but more or less it works. For Windows, I was using MicTec, but probably there is something newer. For Linux, I was using TechLive, but this is Linux change every couple of years, so I'm not sure. These were still okay a couple of years ago. Okay, so install your LaTeX and use it. The editor, this is really depends on the particular computer you are using, okay? But there are editors that help a lot, in which things appear in different colors or whatever. For example, I'm using now the LaTeX that is in Overleaf. That is, or even if I work alone, I still find useful to use Overleaf. Is portable between different things, and the editor I like because things appear autocomplete and things like that. But of course, this is up to you. Now, the subject. As I told you, you have done research on a subject that you have no idea of before, but the advisor told you you want to study this, and you said yes without knowing what you were going to study. But this is the situation, okay? But now 3 months are passed or 6 months are passed, and you are an expert on this particular subject. That is a very, very tiny subject, but of this tiny stuff, you are an expert. Actually, you and the advisor, most of the time, are the only people that really understand what you have done. Okay? This is the standard situation because this subject is so tiny that only people working in it knows what you are doing. Typical situation. Well, there are couple of possibility for the thesis, but imagine that the thesis contains original research. This is the first time that you are doing original research and you have courses and you start maybe in March or February and you have to submit the thesis by July, June, so you have not enough time. The advisor will suggest a very specific problem. Okay, and a very specific problem inserted in a big landscape of things. So I'm inventing. Eh? So I do string theory. And out of string theory, now everybody work in a things that is called swampland. Well, out of swampland, there are open problems like that there are a huge difference in the parameters between this and that. And out of this particular problem, you end up with a specific class of model within the swampland that gives you a solution to this particular problem. And within this particular class of problem of models that solve one problem of the swampland, there are tools that can be improved by adding a parameter more. Okay, and you have done this. Nobody that doesn't know what the swampland is understand this tiny detail that you have been working in for months. So if you talk with the guy in your office, probably you have been boring him all the 5 months. Oh, there is these things and what is the swampland? Okay, so maybe that guy can understand you a bit, but all the rest, no. Okay, so this is the standard situation. You and the advisor maybe understand the thesis and still you have to write for the jury. Now, the jury. We say that they are physicists. This is guaranteed. Some of them know what is the swampland, or at least have heard the word. Well, I'm saying swampland because I think that none of you knows what a swampland is. Hand up those that have ever heard the word. One. Okay, so this is reasonable. So one out of 30. Okay, so this is the situation, which is the probability that one of the jury, well, okay, we are more experienced and so we will have heard the word, but probably none, the probability that one in the jury knows which are the particular problem of this particular class of models within the swampland that solve this, the probability is very low. They know what the swampland is, but they don't know much more. And other that have never heard of it, and still they have to read the thesis. Okay, you have to try to write the thesis in order that both people that have heard the word swampland and those that is the first time that have heard it understand something. You have to write for those that have never heard the word. So this is your goal. Okay, your particular tiny bit within the swampland has to be understood by a person that have never heard the word swampland. But is a physicist. Okay, this is your public. The public is not your advisor. The public is not yourself. And the public is not the guy in string theory that knows what swampland is. The public is the others. Fine? This is not true for a paper. For a paper, you write for the string guys that knows whatever everything about the swampland. Fine? This is a big difference. For the PhD thesis, you can write for people that knows what the swampland is, because in the jury there will be five people that you have chosen and you have selected them because they are doing things related. But in the master thesis, no. Okay. Everybody understand the basics. Everybody are physicists. So they know when you speak about canonical ensemble, when they know when you speak about Poissonian distribution. So basic stuff, they know. How you organize the material? Okay, this I will make use of this short strip. Maybe you know, probably now start to be old. There are comics of the beginning of the 2000. I don't know if they still produce them, but since they are specifically devoted to PhD students, can be useful. So in this particular one, what you are doing is that you start to write down your outline of the thesis. And this works both for the master thesis and for the PhD thesis. So this is the first thing that you do when you write down. Now, most of the times that I will speak about organization of the material, I will give you my recipe. Of course, I cannot teach anything that is different from my own opinion on this. And I write a lot. So I have a piece of paper in which I draw sketches of what I want to do. So this is my suggestion. Of course, there are people that are visual like me and other people that are not. Still, I cannot teach methods that are different from mine. What I do is to write down things, in this particular case, an outline. Now you fill the slots. Why you fill the slots? Well, because this is a thesis. The slots are more or less already given. This is not the Don Quixote in which you decide how long it is, how many parts, or how many chapters. This is a thesis. In a thesis, you have an introduction, full stop. You have a conclusion, full stop. Then you have some chapters. They cannot be 100 chapters. Okay? They have to be a number that is between 1 and 10, and I would say between 1 and 5. Okay? Not too many chapters. You have 50 pages. You cannot divide the material in too many chapters. So let's say that you have, for example, three, four chapters. Now, the first part, the first chapters, has to be devoted to what is already known. Okay? So within your material, there is a part that you have studied in order to understand the part that you have to do. So in this first part, you have to show to the reader the same relevant point that you needed at the very beginning to understand what you have to do. So that the people that read it has the same possibility to understand the follow-up as you. So these chapters are basically fixed. Okay, I will give you a couple of examples. So this is a PhD thesis for some years ago on supersymmetry. Okay? And here you see the first chapter are problems of the standard model. This could be called the introduction. Okay? This is very typical. If you are working in high energy physics, your introduction will say that the standard model is not the end of the story. Because otherwise, you could say, if the standard model works so well, why are you still doing high energy physics and you have not gone to quantum computing? Well, some friends of mine have gone to quantum computing. I'm still working on high energy physics, and I have to motivate myself every time by saying, oh, but the standard model has a lot of problems. It doesn't explain neutrino masses. You don't know what dark matter is. You don't know what generated baryon asymmetry, and so on and so forth. So the introduction is a way in which you motivate. Okay? Then there are these chapters. You see, this is a PhD thesis, so it's lengthier than the master thesis. Still, this guy, that I don't know who is, devoted three chapters, and they are long, to introducing supersymmetry. Okay? So since the thesis goes on supersymmetry, the first chapter that is not the introduction introduce, well, this is the second chapter, the mathematics behind the supersymmetry. Then there is another chapter in which, out of all the possible supersymmetric model, I focus on the minimal supersymmetric model, minimal supersymmetric standard model, that is the supersymmetric version of the standard model, because you are narrowing your subject in order that the reader start from the very starting point and focus on what will be your research. Then, for example, this is a thesis on general relativity. I'm sorry for the example. I'm a theoretician, so most of the examples are from theoretical subject. But the same idea also goes for experimental thesis. How many of you are experimentalist? Half. Theorist? Less than other half. So there are someone that is neither experimentalist, so quantum computing. Okay. A thesis on general relativity, and you see that there is the same, the introduction and a couple of chapters on. You see, general relativity background is also written in the title of the chapter. It's just saying hints of what general relativity is. And then focus on the specific subject within general relativity that are modified gravity theories. And then the thesis itself, the original work will be within this restricted section that are modified general relativity. Fine. So your thesis has to do the same. One chapter is the introduction, couple of chapters. I suggest to have six. The first is the introduction, couple of chapters of general stuff, couple of chapter at most on your stuff, and the conclusion. Okay, so for 50 pages is well balanced. Maybe your results could be glued in one chapter. Maybe. Or maybe the general review could be one. But more or less you are in this ballpark. Okay, one introduction, one the conclusion, and four chapters. So this is the starting point. This part of the thesis, I would suggest that you start to write today. I mean, you have to submit by June if you want to defend in July, or in August if you want to defend in September. In both cases, you have not many time. How many of you have already started writing? One, two, three, four, five. Okay? 5 out of 30. I suggest to the rest to start writing. Fine? The easiest part to write is precisely this one. Why is easy? Well, because everybody has already written this in many papers. So actually, if it was allowed, if it were allowed, not sure. You could cut and copy, cut and paste, but you cannot because it's forbidden because of plagiary laws. Okay? But certainly about general relativity, someone has written something. Okay, so you have a huge amount of literature on the subject that allows you to write something meaningful on this. So this is not new. The difficulty here is to write something that is original because you have written it, but has already been explained many times. Okay, the number of pages, 10 to 20, not more than this. If the thesis is 50, 20 pages of old stuff, it's okay. More than this is too much. Less than this, the problem is that then you have to fill with your own work. Do you have 430 pages? That depends. If you have many material, you make room for this material. Otherwise, well, I would say 10 to 20. The second part is your work. Okay? First, you have a couple of chapters already written. This also makes you feel comfortable because half of the thesis is already done. Actually, and this is very, very important, I will stress it many times. Feed the thesis not to the AI, that also, to improve the language, but to the advisor. Okay, the problem with us, the advisors, is that we are very busy. Okay, we are very busy, we are doing things, then there is June and we have conferences and so on and so forth, and at that point the advisor disappear. Since the advisor disappear, for the student becomes extremely difficult to submit something that can receive a feedback. Okay, so if you write now this part and you give it to the advisor, you have some chance before starting of the conference season that they give you a reaction and say, ah, it's okay, expand this, remove that. And getting a feedback by the advisor, I think, is the most important part of the work that you have in hand. Because to write a thesis by yourself in your home and submit it is one thing, but to get a reaction from the advisor that was the first person that suggested it at the very beginning to improve the thesis is much better. And then from the advisor, you have to go, enter the room or submit a mail or whatever is better, entering physically into the room. Me, look, I have the first half of the thesis written. I have submitted you by mail, and I have also submitted to you by WhatsApp, and I've also submitted to you by Instagram. And if you want to submit it in another way, I will submit it. Please, can you read it a bit? Okay, so this is the best way. If you go every day, better. Okay, so the second part, if you have already written the first part, is much better because you already have half the thesis. And the second part is your work. So in a sense, it's easier. This is not true. It's not easier because you are explaining for the first time something. The rest has been explained many times. Okay, still, you are the best person in the world to explain this. Okay, you have to feel confident on this. Here I write, this is the third part if I have appendices. Now, why? Well, imagine that you have done your work and you solved this equation that was impossible to solve before of you because you are the smartest person in the world. Unfortunately, to solve this equation, you have written five books like this of handwritten notes. Okay, you don't want to put these five books of handwritten notes into the thesis. Still, since your work has been this amount of pages, you want that there is some memory of this somewhere. Where? In the appendices. Okay. All the technicalities that you want that the people knows that you have done have to go to the appendices. So the equation was very difficult to solve, but I used this particular trick to simplify the equation. One page of an appendix. Substitution in the equation things goes like this. We change the function by this other function, and the derivative of this is that. And so an extremely difficult equation, one becomes the extremely simple equation three. And this goes to appendix. Fantastic. And then you have another page written. The appendix are very nice. I use it a lot because allows you to be more technical, but knowing that nobody will read them. If they read them, better. But if they do not read them, it's up to you. I mean, you have written it, you are happy with yourself, and they are there. And also in other paper in the future, you can say in the appendix three of my paper of 20 years ago, it was written that nobody take notice of that, but you know. And so you can refer to an old paper of you in which it was already written. So the referee is supposed to have been reading that. Some of the referee doesn't read the appendices, but in principle, everything is certified. So you can build on these particular things that are already published. Okay, so the appendix is extremely comfortable because the language is not to be very worked. And are other pieces of pages that add up to what is already done. Okay, so if you have to write a couple of appendices, better. Move there all technicalities. You don't want to have technicalities in the text. Okay, every difficult stuff goes to an appendix. So if you have appendices, the third part that you will write is your own stuff without technicalities. The last part that you write is the introduction. Well, this is not true. The last part is the conclusions. But the one but last part is the introduction. In your thesis could be 3 to 6 pages, no more. If there is larger, you are keeping space to the rest, and the rest has to be written. To be less than 3 pages makes the idea that you have not understood why you are doing this. In the introduction, you have to motivate your work. In the presentation, we will see that the most important part is the motivation. So in the introduction, some motivation should be there, but you are also introducing more or less the material. Why you write it at the end? Well, because you have to have been to have written everything else in order to summarize. You cannot summarize and then expand. I mean, you could, but it's not a good idea. To do a summary, you need to have something to be summarized. So first you write the thesis and then you write the introduction. Okay? Since it's the second time you write, because you have already written the thesis, most of the time the introduction explains the same better. You don't want to go back to the thesis once you have understood that you can say it better and modify again the thesis because you are tired and you have already done the work. Since it's already written better in the introduction, you are happy. Fine. So first you write the thesis, then you write the introduction. The conclusion is a summary of the introduction. So this is the last point. We will go back on this when we arrive to the conclusion. Okay, now the old part. I don't know if you want to take a short break. I can go on. Of course, this is the problem with physicists. I can go on indefinitely. Do you want to take 5 minutes of break or not? No? There is no chance that I finish before. I mean, it's possible, of course, I'm joking. Maybe if we don't take a break, we will finish 5 minutes before. Could be. So you are okay, no? And today is incredible. Nobody's still asleep. So from here, this is for the presentation. You have to take care of people that are sleeping. Well, in this case, you are not sleeping, probably because now the chairs are better than last year's. A bit more uncomfortable, so you are fine. So let's go on. I've already convinced you that you have to start today writing the old stuff. When I say that you have to start to writing today, it's true. I mean, you have to start writing today because by Wednesday, I want to discuss what you have produced. Fine. You will submit to me, say, by Tuesday, that in order that on Wednesday we can show the things and discuss them. And if you send it by Monday, it's better because I have time to read it before. Otherwise, we will have to improvise. But last year we improvised and it was okay. Please. In the language that you have chosen. So if you decide to write in Valencian, you send it in Valencian. I mean, everybody more or less can read everything. Okay? In any case, if we do not understand something because it's, well, I mean, Valencian Spanish and English, I can understand. But imagine that it's written in Russian. Well, the people that have written in Russian can say, this is what is written, and we discuss together. So, okay. Then, we first have to decide which kind of information I want to put into the old part. Okay? I have not to start from Newtonian dynamics if I'm talking about general relativity. Okay? I have not to start from dynamics of a mass particle in classic theory if I want to do quantum field theory. Okay, so physics is a broad stuff. You have to restrict already to some subject that is reasonably small in order to include your particular work. And I told you have to understand that the reader is a physicist that knows what you are, understand what you are doing, but doesn't know the basic literature. Okay? This person has not read the holy books on swamplands. Okay? Again, an example on general relativity, the one before. Do not explain what is general relativity from scratch. But still, if you need non-standard formalism, you introduce it. Okay, here you see there was a chapter that was general relativity background that is three pages. Start at page six and is up to nine. So in three pages, you can imagine that this guy has not written the textbook on general relativity. A textbook on general relativity can be 200 or 300 pages long. In three pages, they are only basing blocks. And for example, there is a couple of pages on differential geometry, and then one page probably, no, well, it's up to 13. So 3 pages on Einstein equations. So I understand that there is some basic stuff on differential geometry, and then there is an action, and then there is the derivation of the equation from the action, and something like that. And the guy that wrote this decided that this was enough for the general relativity part. I was in the tribune, in the jury for a thesis on Palatini formalism in JR. That is a particular way of doing general relativity. And of course, in that case, since the main motivation of the thesis was to use a different parametrization, a different formalism, there was a huge chapter on general relativity written in terms of the metric that is the standard way. But because the thesis was precisely doing the same, but with different formalism. So what the formalism itself, that was the focus of the thesis. Otherwise, if it's just the setup of your model, you can reduce to a few pages. This was also needed for this particular thesis, non-standard general relativity. That's why the basic stuff was divided in a very short version on general relativity and a huger one on non-standard general relativity, because this was not common for all the people. And so the guy decided to devote 15 pages to this second part. This, it's okay. So you have to focus on the particular subject and decide how to divide, and then give the elements needed to the reader that is not an expert on general relativity to understand what you have done. Okay, this is the place in which cut and paste is the go-to solution. Why? Well, I'm talking about general relativity. Einstein himself was writing in a very old style fashion, so you will not go to Einstein. But there are books on general relativity in the 60s, 90s that are very well written in a way that is more similar to the way we understand it now. And so the question is, how can I do it better than them? This guy has been paid by an editorial company to write this textbook, and everybody's using this textbook. This has been reviewed, this has been analyzed, and this is the fourth version that I have in my hand. So the guy wrote it 30 years ago, but then there has been updates because, okay, how can I do better? If you have the LaTeX, you just cut and paste and you say, I'm okay. I mean, he has written this, who better? Well, you cannot do it. Fine? This is not allowed. All the universities have a software that goes for plagiarism and so on and so forth. The journals go for plagiarism, so you cannot do it. Okay? This is a good motivation. You will not do it because you cannot do it. Okay? Still, there are ways to use existing material to write something that everybody knows. Okay? These methods are paraphrasing. You have read a sentence by someone on a subject and it's very good, and you modify some words in it because you want to use the meaning of the sentence with your own words. This is perfectly allowed. You can cite, okay? You write your own sentence in any way and saying, more information in reference 3. In reference 3, the The guru of this particular subject has written this in a textbook much better than you. So you say, okay, you just say a couple of sentences and make reference to the holy book on this. A third point, possibility is just to quote. Quote means that you write quote unquote and you copy the sentence. Now, since it's between quotes, everybody understands that this sentence is not yours. You put the reference. So everything is happy. If Steven Weinberg have written about quantum field theory better than anyone else, I quote Steven Weinberg and I put the reference to Steven Weinberg. Fine? Here there are tips. These links, I think it was still working. How to avoid plagiarism. Fine? To all of these, I have to add the AI. Actually, I had some things on the AI, but I have no idea of how this will be considered now, because it's clear that what the if I ask to the AI to write me a paragraph on something, is using sentences that other people have written. So I don't know what we will do now with plagiarism in this sense, because everything is a copy. Software up to now discover that something has been written by an AI. But I think that this is not wrong. So I cannot, I mean, I'm the teacher and I'm a representative of the university in this moment. And all the universities in the world are now questioning themselves on what has to be considered okay or not. And I have no answer. My personal feeling is the following. If I'm writing a novel, the next Quixote, I should write it. I should not ask to the AI to write me the next Quixote, because the next Quixote written by the AI is a potpourri of things that everybody has already written, all put together in a good way. Still, if I'm writing a scientific paper whose goal is to present my own result on a particular subject, I don't think it's incorrect to ask to the AI to write this paragraph on this, if it's better than mine. Okay? So I don't know what will happen with the copyright. This is a problem for the editorial company. They will have a problem. But I don't think that is incorrect to ask to the AI to write a paragraph on this, because my goal is to transmit the information and the information is mine. The goal is not the text itself. So if I can use the AI to write the text better than me, I think it's okay. Still, the university have software that looks for plagiarism and now is incorporating AI. So I'm not sure what happens now. Okay? My suggestion is, in any case, if I ask to the AI to write a paragraph, I will not ask to the AI to write a chapter. I will ask to the AI to write a paragraph or one page of stuff that I can use as a starting point. And then I review it in order to make it mine. Okay? So it's a good way to start things not from scratch. Because starting from scratch, you will see. I mean, if you write this afternoon to start the thesis, I mean, this is a block that you usually find. But if you ask, write me a couple of paragraphs from the mid part of the thesis on this, and you feed the stuff that you've already done, this is okay. And then you start rewriting. Okay? I don't know how this will be considered on the point of view of plagiarism, but up to this moment, I think this is what I would do. The appendices, as I told you, is everywhere you put, I mean, is the place where you put everything that is technical. You can fill a lot of appendices. Most of appendices are short. Never write a long appendix, because a long appendix by itself is a part of the paper. If you really want that the reader goes to the appendix and read 10 pages of appendix, then this means that either this is another paper or should go to the main text. The appendix should be something, one or two pages, that can be skipped by the reader. If the reader doesn't want the details, doesn't read the appendix. Okay? But you can write as many as you want. Now, in a thesis of 50 pages, don't write more than two, three appendices. Don't write 10 appendices, one page each. Okay, in this case, for example, this was a thesis on quantum computing, and they had two appendices. You see that the appendix is two pages, more or less, and is very, very specific. This one basically is just a notation. Okay, and this other one explain a bit more. No more than a couple of pages. If you can write it now, better, because they sum up to the things that you already have in your hand. So if today you have wrote the index and you started to fill things in the general part, tomorrow you start to write down the appendices. I mean, I'm joking. You can start today with the appendices. What you have to do during the night, I mean, sleep. Then this is the most difficult and at the same time the most easy part of the thesis is your stuff. Now, the point is that what is my stuff? The advisor 3 months ago gave you a subject and say, read these three papers and we discuss in a couple of months. You have read the paper, you go back. Okay, now that you have understood this, I want you to study this particular stuff. And you have done it. And you have a result. And so you are writing. So your stuff is the solution of this, or is a particular way of solve this, or is whatever. So first time thing you have to detect, this is my stuff. And then you have to understand how to explain to the reader that this is your stuff. I mean, this is not something that I've read in a book that I've read in a, no, this is, I have done this. Okay, this is the main message of the thesis, that the reader could also not understand what you have done in detail, but have to understand that this is what you have done. These particular 10 pages are my work. If you want to read only my work, it goes to these 10 pages. And maybe I'm not a good, I'm not very well in writing, so you do not understand what I've done, but this is what I've done. Okay? So you could put flags saying for the reader, this is the only relevant part of the paper if you really want to go to the backbone of the things. In this is very helpful having written what I told you to write before. In the first chapters, you have introduced what is old, so what is known to everybody on this particular subject. Okay? Everybody that goes to the literature find this. Okay? Once you have already done this, it's much easier to compare with the new part. Differently from what we have seen in chapter 2, this particular problem can be solved in a completely different way, and we are going to explain it. Okay, the crucial word is differently from. Fine? Since you have already part of the thesis written, you can compare to it and the reader can understand this is new and that is old. So these kind of words are crucial in order to state this is mine. So every time you can, you have to say for the first time, well, for the first time is a bit. But still, imagine that you are the first one to solve an equation. We have found a new method to solve this for the first time, whatever. So you have to say that this is new, this is new, this is new. And having already written what is old is easier to make the difference. Once you have compared differently from what we have explained in section 2, you can elaborate, and then now everybody knows that what comes after is yours. Because remind, you have the index. I'm in the jury. I read the index of the thesis. I've read the title of the thesis or another thesis on GR. Then I go to the index. Okay, general relativity, modified general relativity, equation, blah, 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 in a black hole environment. But maybe this is. Then I go to the chapter. I skip the other because I have some feeling on general relativity. I go to the chapter and say, as we have seen in the previous chapter, this particular equation was not solved in a background of a black hole rotating with hairs or whatever. So we now show, okay, and they say, okay, I'm in the good chapter where to do this. Fine. So everybody is giving messages to the reader in order that the reader goes on the path that you want. The reader is free to jump whatever. You are not with the reader saying, you have to read this before because otherwise you will not know. Okay, the reader maybe is reading the thesis in the 5 minutes before of the defense because he didn't have time to read it before and want to go to the conclusions. And that's it. So if you only read the conclusion, you should be able to understand at least what the talk is going about, because then you have to defend the thesis. In the defense of the thesis, the person in the jury can wait, well, maybe I will understand something and I can imagine a question, because you are obliged to do a question that is not completely stupid. This is the problem of the person in the jury. Okay, to in face of the peers, to make a question that sound intelligent and not stupid. It's not interested in you, it's interested in the peers. Fine. So you have to help the reader to jump to the relevant part. Want to jump to the conclusion? Okay, the conclusion should give a short summary of the thesis. I only read this, it's okay. If you have time to read the introduction gives a better summary of the thesis. Fine. If you even have time to go to the important part, I have to go to the important part saying this is the important part. And if I have time to read everything, I read everything. Fine? Okay, this I will skip, but the most important point is that none of them will actually read the entire thesis. This is true for the master thesis, for the PhD thesis, for whatever memorial we do. Actually, now we are asked every couple of months to write a summary of the activity of the group, of the project, of the whatever and what is. And nobody will read it, never. So we produce an incredible amount of documents in which we make a summary. We have produced 10 articles written in this paper, two theses, four of this, four of that. And also you have fill this particular paragraph on the outreach activity of your group. We have been giving class. Okay, so you have to imagine that the person that is supposed to read this does not read this. Okay? So you have to help that person if that person has 5 minutes to go to the important part of the thesis. Okay. Point four, the introduction. As I told you, this is the most difficult part. So first you write the whole chapters. Then there is the most difficult part in the sense that is your own work and is the relevant, let's say the most relevant part is your work, you want to make it clear to everybody. And then you have to summarize. So in the introduction, you give a complete summary of the thesis. And I should be able to skip the thesis if I read the introduction. I have no time, I read the introduction, I'm happy. I'm of those that has 10 minutes and not 5. If I have 5 minutes, I go to the conclusions. But if I have 10 minutes, I can read the introduction. And I should understand everything. Okay? How is structured the introduction? The introduction is like a thesis in itself. There are papers in which only the introduction is useful. Some paper, I don't know if you know Edward Witten, but he is a guru of string theory. When I say the guru of string theory, most of the time I think of Witten. And he writes extremely lengthy paper, 100 pages, things like that. Most of the time with no equation at all in the 100 pages. So they are basically novels. Okay, in those cases, if you read the introduction, you are happy. Because the introduction is 10 pages, but really it's enough. Okay, so the introduction should be self-contained. So that is why the introduction itself has a structure. First of all, again, you do the old stuff. So in the introduction, there is a paragraph that inserts your research inside the field in which you are working. For example, we will cover subjects that are not explained in the standard model, that is actually the best theory we have to describe the interaction of fundamental particles, whatever. Okay, so first paragraph, set the field. Then there is the second part. Okay, that is the motivation of. Within the standard model, there are many open problems. Out of them, one is the generation of the baryon asymmetry in the universe. We have seen by observation that there are no antibaryons. Still, the standard model is baryon number invariant, and so we have no idea why there are no baryons, no antibaryons. We will propose in this thesis a method to understand this in the framework of, okay? This part in the defense is the most important. If the people in the jury understand why you do something, you have a halfway having to the goal, okay? More important than your particular solution to a problem is to understand why you want to solve this problem. Why is it relevant? Why you cannot live without it. I mean, I cannot live without understanding why there are no antibaryons. I've seen an old chapter by Doctor Who in the 70s in which there was antimatter. Where is gone? Well, and since, okay, actually, I've seen an old chapter of Doctor Who in the 70s on antimatter, but I was 5 years old. I have no idea what antimatter was, of course, but still was very nice. Then you have the third part that is the summary of the summary of the summary. Okay, so after you have introduced the general field and explained why you want to do what you've done, you write, we have found that using this particular method that will be discussed in section 4, we have found as a result that this trigger of fourth level detect allows to remove the backgrounds from, okay? And this is what you have found. And then usually there is a short paragraph. This is always there. That is, the thesis is organized as follows. And this is, in words, a summary of the index. I don't know why it is. Why is it there? Because is it there always? Okay. In a letter, maybe there is no space for no room for this, but usually at the end of the introduction there is this short thing. Okay, so this is standard. Now, this part of the introduction should be there. You cannot skip one of the three. Well, this maybe you can in a short letter you can skip, but the other three you should not do it. It's extremely important to insert your research in a particular field and to explain why you do what you do. Maybe the summary of the result could be skipped if you are in a letter, you have no room, and I mean, the paper is 5 pages long. I will not put in the introduction a summary of the other 3 pages. But that depends. In the thesis, you should put it. Now, the conclusions is a summary of the introduction. So again, you put the motivation. Maybe you can skip the general field. You have not to introduce again that you are working in the standard model. You put again the motivation and the results. Now, the most important part of the conclusions and also of the end of the talk when you defend your thesis is what I'm going to do when when I grow older. Okay? You have done a particular work suggested by your advisor on a particular stuff, and you got a result. What next? In the conclusion, you put the understanding to the reader that this is not the last chapter of this. Okay, you have not, this is not the end of the world. I'm already doing the next stuff. Imagine that you submit in August and you defend the thesis on September. By that time, you already know if you are going to do the PhD or not. Most of the time, many times, you do the PhD with the same guy with which you have been doing the master thesis. The master thesis is something like a warm up for the PhD. So, most of the time, you already know that you are working on something that comes after. And the advisors say, okay, since in the master thesis you have been working on this, now you can focus more on this particular other way. Okay. So, in the conclusion, you started to make a view of what comes next and saying standard words. Like, this is but the first step on the road to understand why there are no antibaryons. We will cover other this aspect in work, but this is beyond the scope of the thesis. Okay? So the thesis have to leave the feeling that is a work in progress. This is not the end of the story. I don't read the thesis and that's it. I read the thesis, I get interested, and I say, ah, we can do things. Because in the question time, in any case, they will ask you, what are you going to do next? So you already give a hint in the conclusion of what you are going to do next, or you already think about in order to answer to the question that people will give you. Fine? Fine. This is finished. Fantastic. Okay, so the first part, as I told you, was the organization. So today we have been seeing how you organize the thesis in chapters and what you put inside. Now, as I told you, I would like to have by Wednesday examples of half-written stuff using AI on your thesis. Tomorrow, not tomorrow, on Monday, this will be more difficult because we have no time, but on Monday I discuss technical aspects, and on Tuesday I would like to discuss them, but maybe we move the AI discussion on Tuesday so you have time, and Wednesday we discuss on the figures, why this figure is a mess, why this figure is okay, and things like that. Okay, so maybe you will write something by Tuesday, so submit it by Monday, and the technicalities we leave it for Wednesday. Okay, so what I want you to start preparing is choose your favorite AI. I don't know how many of you have paid enhanced program. I've not, so I'm using the free one. Last year there were a couple of people that say, yeah, I'm paying 20 euros per month to use this. Okay, so what I understand is the free version has improved, so now most of us can live with that better. I am using ChatGPT for chat talks or whatever, if I have to prepare a recipe or whatever. And I use Copilot for physics. Why? I think that the engine behind is the same, but I don't know. I like the interface and I trained it in order to be more respondent to my particular way to do physics. But there is Gemini, there is whatever, so you use whatever. It's interesting. Write up what have you used. So maybe we can do some statistics about the cloud is better than. Okay, what I want. I was asking an index. So I want an index. You have to think about it. I would like, let's say, one paragraph, at most one page of the introduction. You have not to write it. I want the AI writing for you. Okay? Now, and if possible, you give me the prompt that you used to get the result. Okay, you put me the strategy that you used in order to get what you got. I don't want you to go on it. So what comes out, comes out. Maybe you can try three or four prompts in order to get something that is more like what you want, but I don't want then you take the text and you start modifying it. What it comes out, it comes out. So I want the index, the structure of the thesis, the first paragraph of the introduction, say, and I don't know, the first paragraph of each chapter. Okay? If you have more, because maybe you started to write the thesis a couple of months ago, you also put me what you have already done, so we can compare. So this is the AI production, and this is what I've been doing, maybe using the AI, but in any case with supervision. So what I want you to see is I'm going to teach, no? So what can I teach? I'm not better than you in using AI because we both started a couple of years ago. What I'm better than you, hope, is the experience in physics. So what can I teach is how I detect errors or improve the production of the AI or things like that. This I can teach you because you have not the experience that I have. My general feeling, I mean, I'm crazy about it. I have the feeling that with the AI, I can do whatever. It's like having a student here every time and not any student. Why we don't, I mean, probably now is a good way to, is a bad way to present it, but most of the time the advisor take advantage of the students in order to do boring things. Say, you have to write to solve this particular problem by tomorrow or by next week. Because it's boring, you know how to do it, but you have no time, so take Mathematica and try to solve this, and by next week give me the results and we produce a plot. Okay. Now, the student, of course, can react in many different ways. There are people that disappear, and 1 week after, give you the result that maybe is completely wrong or not, or it's okay. Other people came day every day saying, I don't know how to do this, I don't know how to do that, I don't know how to do this, but there is a progressive, let's say, improvement. Okay, my feeling with AI is like that this is the kind of student that come every day producing something and you improve on it. And this is a strange feeling because, I mean, you can do it every time you have an idea, you immediately get a result. So it's a feeling that I'm doing a lot of progress that usually would take months. Still, I've learned that most of the time you cannot believe, trust what is the production. I don't know which mathematics is using. I still have the feeling that the mathematics is a refresh of what the AI have seen in the papers. But that is the feeling is like it's doing really the mathematics, but I don't think that the AI has access to Maple to do computation. I don't think so. I don't know, maybe some software has or not, but so you need a lot of supervision. And what I want to try to discuss on Tuesday, yes, is how to improve your supervision on specific subjects that are related to physics. You do your own supervision when they give the recipe and the recipe has too much salt, and you say, hey, well, the AI always gives too much salt. So you will supervise the recipe, but we will supervise the physics. In particular, if I manage, I prepare some, well, I have prepared a discussion with AI on the bibliography that is very illustrative. So in the bibliography, you need a lot of supervision and things like that. Okay, so this is the homeworks for Tuesday. It's a lot of things. It can take 2 minutes, but it can also take a lot of time. Next time we see on Monday. So on Monday, if I would like to start at 9:30, so 1 quarter before than what is written. I will modify the Indigo page in order to be here at 9:30. And like today, probably, yes. So I will be able to go to the conference. If some of you is interested, it's on the multiculturality at IFIC. There are people from many different countries. Some of you are from different countries. So we discuss of this particular point within the IFIC. And then there is paella. This is the Valencian commitment to the multiculturality. Time for questions. So we are happy to having finished some minutes before. Also, people online, you turn on the microphone and say if you have questions. So please. My slides, yes. And if I manage also the video recording, usually it's a bit long, but I think I could. Actually, if you go to courses of other years, they will be there. Unfortunately, I will try to upload the one that was modified. I mean, there are a few in the talk of today, maybe most basically is the same, but I will upload the one that you have not seen. No other questions? Yes. This is one thing that actually I ask a lot to the AI now. I mean, the point is the following. Usually, we work a lot on a given subject. So I'm not talking as a student, I'm talking as a professional of the field. So when I work a lot on a given subject, I know what is done and what is not. So I always know this is something that people have not done. On the other hand, when I say that I notice a boost with AI, is precisely on the other side project that I have and that were in the there because I have no time to study the bibliography and to go deep. I mean, this is a creative work, okay? The work in physics, in my opinion, is extremely creative. Also, if you are, I mean, you probably don't feel like that if you are the experimentalist that is the newest one and they told you to take the screwdriver and to turn that piece of the detector, you don't feel to be in a creative environment. But still, when you grow up and you end up to devising your own experiment, you see that it's extremely creative. Okay. So a big part of my work is to have ideas. Okay? This is precisely where we are useful to the society because we are very good in having ideas in this particular subject that is physics. And I always work, for example, I've been working a lot on neutrinos, so I'm aware of the latest paper on neutrinos that came out 2 days ago, and actually now no longer, but up to 5 years ago, the first thing in the morning that we were doing was seeing which are the new paper coming out today on this particular subject. Okay? So every day you turn up the computer and you see which are the new arrival on archive, this one. And you read a couple of papers. Now nobody is doing like this. But this was the bread and butter before. However, we have many ideas, and I have ideas that are not on neutrino physics. Okay. These ideas, I cannot work on it because I have not the capacity of studying this for 1 month. And I cannot put a student on this because I'm an expert in neutrino physics, not in this other stuff. So there where I'm now going to the AI. I have ideas that are not precisely in my field, so I can develop it much faster than before without no student. And I arrive to a degree in which I can say, okay, this is interesting. And then, of course, I have to discover if this is exist already or not. And this is how I'm using the AI. Once I have something that is already mature enough to go deeper, to start to solving some equation and so on and so forth, I say, is there in the literature something similar to this? The answer is always yes. Okay, but is this written in a different way with respect to what is in the literature? And since the AI is, I don't know the word in any language, flattering probably in English, American. Flattering is a good way to say that the AI always says nice things. It's okay. So it always say, you are fantastic. So the answer is always yes, you have written this differently. Then you have to go deeper and deeper and deeper. And at some point you end up with an action and you say, but look, I've already seen this action 20 years ago in a paper by this guy. Is it true? Yes, it's true. You are right. And why didn't you tell me before? Because I have not the knowledge so broad as you. You are a liar. You have much more knowledge than me. So why didn't tell you before? Well, because I didn't notice that this sign was the same of that one, and this was written with a different signature, and so on. Okay, but can't you see that the signature is just a matter of convention? Once you said it is true, but before I didn't so that. Okay, so there is a kind of interaction. In the end, you end up usually with this has already been done by this Chinese group that you are not aware of in this paper. And then you go to a different subject. Okay, so no other trick. Well, I will feed the papers. I will ask to have you written the paper or are in collaboration? But have you written something? Okay. So first thing is that these are my papers up to now, and I want to write a PhD thesis out of it. This is my particular way of writing. Okay, so the AI has to be aware that your English is this kind of English. Your sentences are these kind of sentences. You write this way. If you have other material, you put inside. So the most the AI learn about you, the better. Okay, then I want to structurize this material that was already written in papers into chapters. Which is your suggestion? There will be some suggestion. Maybe you agree with the suggestion or not. Probably not completely. And so you will start to make something like this. And then you can also say, okay, from paper three, took this particular part, section two, and put it into chapter four of the thesis, 1-to-1. You could do with a cut and paste, but you can do it faster. And then when you have organized your material in different things, or let's say in chapter three, I think that merging article one and article two would be the best way. This came before, this came after, but I'm not comfortable with none of them. Could you suggest a way to merge the two? So I think this is the kind of interaction I would do. I feel that I'm not saying anything new for you, eh? Probably all of you are already doing this. The only place where I really noticed that I knew more than the AI was the bibliography that I will discuss on Monday. Well, still, I give you this. I was asking about a particular subject that was neutrino tomography of the Earth, because there was a talk that I've heard that I was listening to in TEFPA, that was a conference we had in Valencia in November, from the IceCube collaboration, and they have some result. And so it came out, there is a very nice paper by the IceCube collaboration on this that came out in 2023, blah, blah, blah. Nice. I've never heard of it. Fantastic. I look for the paper, doesn't exist. I say, this paper doesn't exist. I'm sorry, no, because the title is this one. I look for the new title, the paper doesn't exist. Look, the paper doesn't exist. No, but there should be, maybe I took this from that and that from that. I was looking, no, let me look. This particular sentence goes to this number, physics letters B, whatever. Is this other paper that is on quark hydrodynamics? This has nothing to do with neutrino tomography. I'm sorry, no, the only paper on this is neutrino tomography on Earth, of Earth by Donini et al. And I say, I know, I wrote that paper. Ah, you are Donini. I'm so glad to know you. I say, okay, so if you know the subject, you find that it's making, in particular the bibliography, they are completely of the invented from the very, they looks nice, but they are invented. Well, no longer. After 1 year working, now it produces the right reference at the first time. So I've been 1 year telling that he was joking, creating, that was stupid, that was inventing, and I mean, I start to be more confident in the interaction, but eventually you manage to get references. That's okay. Now, I suppose that in this moment, if you will ask for referencing, you have to supervise it. You have to take every reference and go and see if they exist. And they will not exist, and there will be the merging of the number of one journal with the title of another paper by another author. And the three of them as to match is like a puzzle in which you have to say this title goes with this number and this author, but that author, but with, okay? So you will need a lot of supervision. Fine, so see you on Monday. I think that there are no questions. Questions from online, no? I start sharing to see if there is something in the chat. No, nothing in the chat. Okay, so let's stop here and see you on Monday. Thanks.
Okay.